Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8. Dhruva Maharaj leaves home. Text 35. Dhruva uvacha so yam shamo bhagavata sukha dukha tatmana darshita kripaya umsam durdarsho smad vidhais tu ya dhruvaruvacha soyam shamo bhagavata sukha dukha hatatmanam darshita kripaya pumsam Dvardarsho smad vidhaistuya Dhruvaruvacha Soyam shamo bhagavata Sukha dukha hatatmanam Darshita kripaya pumsam Dvardarsho smad vidhaistuya Dhruvaruvacha Soyam shamo bhagavata Sukha dukha hatatmanam Darshita kripaya pumsam Dvardarsho smad vidhaistuya Dhruva uvacha Dhruva Maharaj said sa that I am this shama equilibrium of mind bhagavata by your lordship sukha dukha happiness and miseries hata atmanam those who are affected darshita shown kripaya by mercy pumsam of the people durdarsha very difficult to perceive asmat vidhai by persons like us to but ya whatever you have said translation Dhruva Maharaj said my dear lord Narada ji for a person whose heart is disturbed by the material conditions of happiness and distress whatever you have so kindly explained for attainment of peace of mind is certainly a very good instruction but as far as I am concerned I am covered by ignorance, and this kind of philosophy does not touch my heart. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are various classes of men. One class is called akamis, referring to those who have no material desire. Desire must exist, either material or spiritual. The material desire arises when one wants to satisfy one's personal senses. One who is ready to sacrifice anything to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be said to have spiritual desire. Dhruva did not accept the instruction given by the great sage Narada because he thought himself unfit for such instruction, which prohibited all material desires. It is not a fact, however, that those who have material desires are prohibited from worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the essential instruction from the life of Dhruva. He frankly admitted that his heart was full of material desires. He was very much affected by the cruel words of his stepmother, whereas those who are spiritually advanced do not care about anyone's condemnation or adoration. In Bhagavad Gita it is said that persons who are actually advanced in spiritual life do not care for the dual behavior of this material world. But Dhruva Maharaj frankly admitted that he was not beyond the affliction of material distress and happiness. He was confident that the instruction given by Narada was valuable, yet he could not accept it. The question raised here is whether or not a person afflicted by material desires is fit to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The answer is that everyone is fit to worship him. Even if one has many material desires to fulfill, he should take to Krishna consciousness and worship the Supreme Lord Krishna, who is so merciful that he fulfills everyone's desires. Through this narration, it will become very clear that no one is barred from worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if one has many material desires. Translation: Dhruva Maharaj said, "My dear Lord Naradaji, for a person whose heart is disturbed by the material conditions of happiness and distress, whatever you have so kindly explained for attainment of peace of mind is certainly a very good instruction. But as far as I am concerned, I am covered by ignorance, and this kind of philosophy does not touch my heart." Amigyanatamarandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshuramilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vanchikalpa Tarubhyas Cha Kripa Sindhubhyeva Cha Paritanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunijananda Sri Advaiti Gadadha Shivasti Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So for anyone who's practicing spiritual life or who's interested in trying to practice spiritual life, generally the idea will be there that material desire or even desire is not a very good thing. Generally, people who have some spiritual aspirations or a little bit of spiritual perception, they are aware that what is keeping me away from my spiritual life or what is holding me back from advancing in my spiritual life is my desires. We want to become Krishna conscious, but our mind tells us, no, not today, tomorrow. Today, you've got so many important things to do. You have to make money. You have to become famous. You have to make sure you've got all material facilities, that you're not lacking in anything. And like this. So later you become Krishna conscious. Like Prahlad Maharaj's friends told him, that we are too young. We're too young. We're just school children. How can we become Krishna conscious? How can we take up spiritual life? We're too young. So let's just play. So Narada Muni told them, what is it? Kumarada Acharo Pragya, something like that. Kumarad, right from childhood, from any time, from whenever the time is that you come in contact with it, from that time you start becoming Krishna conscious. So if you start coming in contact with Krishna consciousness when you're a child, start then. Some people, like those school children, they say we're too young. Some people say we're too old. And so, sort of like you can't win, really. I mean, if people were to have their way, in one sense, No one would become Krishna conscious because they're either too young, too old, too rich, too poor, too happy, too sad, too much desirous, not enough desirous. Material life is like this. Anything other than Krishna consciousness, anything will do, as long as it's not Krishna consciousness. Anyway, that tendency may be there. So, Dhruva Maharaj, he's thinking that I have too many material desires. So, for other people, like he says here, for a person whose heart is disturbed by material conditions of happiness and distress, then your spiritual instructions will probably be very attractive and very useful. But me, I'm not like that. I have too many material desires. Therefore, your instructions are not relevant to me. I wouldn't be able to practice them. So, not now, later perhaps. So some people may think like that. So, generally though, people who are trying to practice spiritual life, they realize that desire is not good. Material desire. So now they can't conceive of something like spiritual desire. They can't conceive of that. So they think that we must become desireless. But what they don't realize is that that is a desire also. If you desire to become desireless, that is a desire. So in order to become desireless, you would have to desire to become desireless very strongly. Because desire, these desires you're trying to get rid of, they are very strong. So if you're going to get rid of them, you have to become even stronger. So in this way, you will end up becoming very desirous. So this is something like a spiritual catch-22, or something like that, as they say. Just at the last moment, when you thought you got there, you find you're a long way from where you're trying to go. An awfully long way. And you're actually getting sidetracked. So it's like that. It's like that. Just like the Buddhists think, and the Mayavadis, they think that we have to give up our personal existence. So, they're thinking, I must give up my personal existence. I must. So in this way, in the name of giving up their personal existence, they're reinforcing this, their personal existence. I must give it up. I must. I must. So this is a very difficult situation. And generally, they don't really understand what is the real position. Actually, in most cases, they become frustrated and give up. That's why you don't find many Mayavadis or Buddhists. Shishinatai Gora Hare Kheja. That's why you don't find many Mayavadis. Where are they? Here in Hillbrow, there are many Hare Krishna devotees. But where are the Mayavadis? Where are they? In South Africa, where are they? The only ones who come anywhere near it are the Arya Samaj in South Africa. But they are completely absorbed in old age homes. So they've come down to the material platform because they couldn't find any real taste. And they couldn't inspire people on the spiritual platform. The only way they're able to inspire people is on the material platform, to do some materially pious work. But otherwise, on the spiritual platform, they found no one was interested. Because it's very hard. It's very hard to achieve this position of desireless, total desirelessness, or of giving up your personal existence. It's very hard. If it's possible at all. So here, Srila Prabhupada is explaining the real situation, that desirelessness means no personal desire. But as living beings, one of the symptoms of the soul is desire. We are conscious living beings. In material life, our characteristics are being exhibited, that we are conscious, we have feelings, we are prone to perform activities, to have relationships. These are all part of our spiritual nature. And even though people generally are not engaged in spiritual life, but still these spiritual characteristics are manifesting, although unfortunately in perverted ways. Material consciousness, material relationships, material emotions, material activities. But by constitution, the soul is conscious, active, emotional, having relationships like this. So everything is being misdirected, that's all. So, spiritual life means to be spiritually active and to be spiritually desirous. It's just a matter of redirecting that misdirected energy, that's all. Just a matter of redirecting it. So an advanced transcendentalist will have many desires. Many desires. Will always be desiring and acting on those desires in so many ways, very busy, engaged in so many Krishna conscious activities, manifesting desires to do things for Krishna. This is the advanced stage of Krishna consciousness. So, it's one thing to have the wrong idea about what it means to become desireless. That's one thing. Now, Dhruva Maharaj, he has another idea. His idea is that he has too many material desires, therefore he's not qualified. He thinks he's not qualified. So Srila Prabhupada is making the point, he's referring to one other verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, akama sarva kamova moksha kama udaradi tirena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param, that whether you are akama, if you're actually desireless somehow or other, or sarva kama, you have all desires, you're full of desire, or moksha kama, whether you are desiring liberation, whatever your condition is, whatever end of the scale you may be, or like that, whatever side of the picture you may be at, whatever your condition is, tivrena bhakti yogena, you should engage in devotional service, yajeta purusham param, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Don't worry. Dhruva is worried. I'm too desirous. Because we know very well, by now we should know, that Dhruva Maharaj wanted a kingdom. Big kingdom. We may not want a big kingdom. So we may not be as desirous as him. We might be happy just with a little house somewhere and able to mind our own business and live peacefully. We might be happy with that, or at least reasonably satisfied. He felt he wanted a kingdom bigger than the whole universe. He wanted to show his father. His father's kingdom was almost the whole universe. And his grandfather's kingdom, Lord Brahma, was actually the whole universe. So Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted to show his father, teach him a lesson, by getting a bigger kingdom even than his grandfather's, even than Lord Brahma. That means bigger than this universe. So he was really desirous. But Prabhupada is explaining here that despite the fact that actually Dhruva was extremely disqualified. But still, the answer for him was that still you engage in devotional service. And even though now you may be a long way from the right standard, but still you carry out devotional service. Still you begin. And you apply yourself. And then gradually it will come. So this is the nature of Krishna consciousness. Such a powerful process. In other processes of spiritual life, you have to already be quite pure. Otherwise, if you're trying to practice, cultivate that spiritual consciousness in whatever, in a certain particular way, your position may be very sensitive. So if you get exposed to some material influence, if you're not already quite pure, then you may fall down. Therefore, we know the example of Vishvamitra Muni. He was practicing Hatha Yoga, physical exercises, part of the process of Ashtanga Yoga. And he was becoming very powerful. So Lord Indra, who is himself a materially very desirous person, full of desires, he became worried that this Vishvamitra is becoming so powerful, he may be able to challenge me. So he thought, let me make some arrangements so he falls down. So he sent one heavenly society girl to entice Vishvamitra. Society girl is a nice way of saying prostitute, actually. So he sent her. Vishvamitra was sitting, doing his hatha yoga. His eyes were closed. So he didn't even see her. All that he perceived was the sound of her ankle bells tinkling. That's all. And he fell down. Then he opened his eyes, and then he saw this rather astonishing looking young woman. And then actually they got married, and then there's a whole story develops from there. Shakuntala, I think, was born. And it's quite a long story. So now he had been meditating, actually I forget the exact period of time, but I think it may have been 60,000 years. If not, it may have been 40. But give or take 20,000, probably doesn't make an awfully big difference. He'd been meditating and doing all these exercises and things for an extremely long time. Really a very long time. So you would, and he was very serious about it. He was not, you know, sort of half-hearted at all. He was completely dedicated to his spiritual development. But all that happened was he heard the ankle bells. Then by the time he'd opened his eyes, it was already too late. So then they got married, and then their whole household business developed from that. And then after some time, he came to the realization, wait a minute, I think I'm entangled. What happened? I was just trying to become God-realized. Here I am working hard to maintain my family. Something's gone wrong. So then he just left home to go back to that same practice. But this time he was thinking that I got to make sure I don't get exposed to any potential dangers like I did. So he thought, let me meditate and do my hatha yoga at the bottom of a lake, underwater. So he went to this lake somewhere, went right to the bottom, and he was doing his practices there for another so many thousands of years, another 30 or 40 or so, give or take a few thousand years. There he was. And this time he was thinking, well, I don't have to close my eyes because there's no one around. So he had his eyes open. But then he saw two fish mating. And again, he lost his whole spiritual consciousness, came out of the water again. Then actually I don't even know what happened, but He came down to the material platform again. He married?
About to marry the first person he
sees. Oh, really? Oh, I see. So he did that, did he? Oh, I see. I don't know if they lived happily ever after. Probably unlikely.
Well, while he was coming out of the water, he fell short of breath.
Oh, did he?
Because he lost his
power. Oh, he lost his power, yeah. So anyway, things were not working out for Vishwamitra spiritually. Because that process, in order to practice that process, you already have to be very pure, and you have to be in a very pure environment. Just like last night, we were discussing from Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains to Arjuna the process of dhyana yoga, meditation, silent meditation. And in order to do it, you have to go away from the city. And you have to live on your own. In a place where, for the rest of your life, you will not see another person. And as far as shelter goes, well, you don't worry about that. You just sit out in the open. As far as food is concerned, you don't worry about that. So, who is going to do that? No one's going to do that, seriously. And if you want to do that meditation in the city, then you can't. Here in Hillbrow, police sirens going off. People screaming, the occasional shot, and all these interesting things to help us from having our lives become dull. So, how are you going to do your silent meditation? You're not. So Arjuna was saying that you have suggested this process to me, but I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can do it. So, of course, Krishna then acknowledged, yes, all right, don't try and do it. And then he said, you take up the process of bhakti yoga. Because, like in the case of Arjuna, he was about to fight in a battle. And it's very hard to fight in a battle while you're doing silent meditation. Sitting down in the lotus position with your eyes half closed, suspending your breathing. The ingoing breath has to be merged into the outgoing and you stop breathing. And it's very hard to do that when you're in the middle of a battle, fighting. So, but bhakti yoga, Arjuna was able to practice bhakti yoga in the context of fighting in the battle. Because bhakti yoga is such a process that you can do whatever activity you may do in the context of bhakti yoga. Anywhere. Even in the middle of Hillbrow. Anywhere. Actually, it doesn't necessarily make any difference where. But you can be in the most exalted. You can start at the beginning and progress to the most exalted level of bhakti yoga right here in Hillbrow. And it is not in any way an obstacle to your advancing in spiritual consciousness. So bhakti yoga is like that. You may be pure. If you're already pure, that's very nice. Then you just practice bhakti yoga and you'll make good advancement. If you're very impure, like Dhruva Maharaj is saying, so many powerful material desires, his mind is fixed, he wants this kingdom. And that's all there is to it. He's going to get it. Totally determined. So that's the other end of the scale. But you just chant Hare Krishna, you just take up Krishna consciousness, and you'll make advancement. Just like there's the sage Valmiki, you probably heard of him, he wrote Ramayana. So, he was, prior to becoming a devotee, he was not a devotee, he was a murderer, highway robber type. He would hold people up, rob them, if they objected in any way or if he just felt in the mood, he'd kill them. And he didn't care. That was the state of his heart. Very hard, very contaminated, very bad. So there's a terrible person. One day Narada Muni was coming through, and Valmiki held up Narada Muni.
He doesn't have to convince me further, but he may feel he has to. Anyway, like this, the Lord was dealing with King Anga. An apparent curse, an apparent blessing which turns out to be a curse, but actually is a blessing in the long run. Similar thing happened to Narada Muni. He got the association of the devotees. He made a lot of advancement through their association. Then they left. He wanted to go with them and keep on with his Krishna conscious activity, but he couldn't leave his mother. Then his mother died. He was only 5. His mother was bitten by a snake and died. And people might think, oh, what a curse. 5-year-old boy, orphaned, and just a very low-class Sudra family. So what's going to happen to him? So it looks like a curse. But he immediately understood this is the mercy of the Lord. So he's making an arrangement so I can get out of my entanglement and come closer to him. So immediately he went on pilgrimage. And he was just immersed in Krishna consciousness, taking the opportunity to increase his Krishna consciousness. So it looks like a curse, but it's a blessing, actually. So we have to try and develop this perception. Krishna is there. Krishna's watching all of us. You may think that I am Bhakta this, or Bhaktin that. And why would Krishna look after me? But he does. And he wants you to advance. So he will make certain arrangements. And if you start desiring something which is not Krishna conscious, then he may well intervene. And because you're desiring that thing, you may think, if he intervenes, you may think, oh, but this is not good. You may feel frustrated that your desire is not being satisfied. But just take it as Krishna's mercy. Just take it as Krishna's mercy and stick at the Lord's lotus feet and just wait for him to give his mercy as he wants. Don't become insistent that I want it and you must give it. If you don't, I won't like you any longer. I won't serve you. I'll go and play on my own. Not like that. Tadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. Srila Prabhupada's quoting this verse. Krishna saying that for my devotees, I help them, I give them the intelligence. So he gives the intelligence. That means that we don't have it. He has to give it. We don't have it. So we don't have it means we're thinking in the wrong way. But then he gives us the right way. He gives us the intelligence that, no, you think like this, and you act like this. So we shouldn't be too attached, thinking that I already understand what to do it, how to become Krishna conscious, what I need, what I don't need. We shouldn't think like that. And then Krishna reveals something that actually, you can't have this. I'm not going to allow you. And then you think, but I know what I need, so I need this. So if he's not giving it, there's something wrong. Not like that. We don't have the intelligence. He'll give it. So when he reveals things, we have to understand that this is his mercy, even though it may clash with our idea. Take it as his mercy and don't be too attached. But just carry on in devotional service and taking what he gives us as mercy. In this way, we can make advancement very nicely. Any comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.